GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, hello, that's me. I serve as host to GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, your executive producer.
And each week, Bob and I search to introduce you to people that are changing the world and making it a better place to live with their sustainable ideas and innovations.
They got to make common sense. They got to make economic sense also in order to get here on GreenSense.
And they also have to show why they're good for the environment. Bob, who are we going to meet this week?
Well, we know solar is good for the environment, and more gigabytes of solar energy are being generated in the U.S. In fact, it was a record-breaking quarter, third quarter last year. We'll find out more about that. Also, I know you're a flying car aficionado, even though you don't currently own one. There's going to be a flying car race later this year, Robert. This is exciting.
I love flying cars, I love the topic, and I can't wait to hear about that. And it's all coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. Looking back at the year that was, a lot happened with renewable energy. Some positive steps forward, some steps back. One big leap forward was the installation of solar energy panels. A report that just came out shows that the third quarter of 2016 shattered all previous records. To explain, we're joined by the Solar Energy Industries Association VP of Communications, Dan Witten. Dan, welcome to GreenSense.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
Your new report says 1 megawatt of solar energy was installed every 32 minutes in the U.S. That's the largest ever for the industry. Put that into context for us. How much is that, and how much more is that than in previous periods?
Well, yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment, and it's close to double what we've done in the past, even the most that we've done in the past. 1 megawatt is enough for, depending on where you are, between about 160, 170 homes. In the last quarter, we installed enough solar to support power needs for the equivalent of 700,000 homes. So it's just, again, about double what we've done in the past, and we're really excited about it.
What do you attribute this prolific growth to?
Well, yeah, there's a lot that's gone into it. I think the most important thing is that the cost of solar has dropped by about 70% in the last 8 years. So it's really in some parts of the country, it's the cheapest form of new electricity. And so that's probably the biggest single factor. The other side of it, part of it is that solar has become demystified for people. People know that they can buy solar, put it on their own roofs, and derive immediate benefits out of it. So, again, it's not this out there technology. It's something that's been brought home to millions of Americans.
Have there been any major technological advances that have helped reduce the price of solar panels, or is it just that they're manufacturing so much more that you're getting the economy of scale?
Yeah, I mean, economy of scale is a huge part of it, but you can also get a lot more electricity out of each panel. All the panels are smaller, lighter than they have been in the past, and so there are a number of factors, but economy of scale is probably the biggest now.
How much of the purchase decision is based on economics, and how much is it based on wanting to do a better job for the environment and reduce emissions?
I think increasingly it's about economics. When we make the case for going solar, we always point to the price, the fact that it's lower than ever before, and the fact that it is cheaper than a lot of alternatives. You know, things have changed in the power sector. And so coal is not readily available. Nuclear has become very expensive. there's a lot of natural gas, but you can't survive on gas alone. So it's really an economic argument, and it's a successful economic argument.
The city of Berkeley one time set up a TIF-like financing model to fund a solar panel installation. What kinds of other innovative purchasing or financing models have you seen out there that may have helped with the increased use of solar panels?
Well, there's a number of financing models that people are using. There's a program called PACE, or Property Assessed Clean Energy, that allows you to invest in solar energy based on the value of your property. There are financing mechanisms that you can use, leasing, for example, or long-term power purchase agreements that have made it easier for people to go solar. You do not have to come up with a huge portion of the cost of any project, whether it be a home project or a utility scale project, up front. And because of the low cost of solar, the payback is much faster than it was in the past. And that really figures into the financing as well.
How much has Elon Musk and First Solar improved the business economics?
Well, gosh, those are two different examples. First Solar is a large scale, utility scale company for the most part that also manufactures and does a lot of other things. And they have been instrumental in showing how you can really do these large scale, utility scale projects at a lower cost than other energy sources. On the home front, when you look at SolarCity and other companies like that, Vivint, Sunrun, they've really, again, shown the American consumer that solar couldn't be put on their roofs at an affordable rate that offers payback, and it gives people a chance to really make a difference in the environment. And so, again, two different approaches and very successful ways of doing business.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Dan Whitten from the Solar Energies Industry Association about a recent report they published showing record growth in the solar industry. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Dan, where does most growth come from? Residential, commercial, or large-scale solar farms?
Well, in the most recent report, a large percentage of the new projects are utility scale projects. So the largest percentage of growth is in the utility scale right now. And states like California has been a long time leader, but states like Utah and Texas and Georgia and Colorado have really jumped to the forefront as they see the business case for going solar. So we're starting to see the industry diversify in terms of where these projects are being built.
California, according to my data here, became the first state ever to add more than 1 gigawatt of utility solar panels in a single quarter. How much is a gigawatt for those of us that don't deal with that?
Gigawatt is enough to power about 160,000 homes.
Whew, that's a lot.
That's a lot. So it, in California, it could be one pretty good sized city.
And what other states or regions are seeing big growth in solar?
Well, I mentioned Utah. It jumped to number 2 in total PV installations from number 8 in 2015. Texas jumped to number 3 from number 9. Colorado jumped from to number 5 from number 12 in terms of installation. So Utah, Texas, Colorado probably saw the biggest jumps.
So your report covers the third quarter of 2016. Do you expect the fourth quarter, which is just finishing up, to show even better growth?
Yeah, actually, we think the fourth quarter is going to even shatter the third quarter's record. And one factor in this, there was a pipeline of projects that were lined up for the end of 2016 under the fear that the investment tax credit was going to expire. And so you saw a lot of people setting up these projects. The investment tax credit didn't expire. And so you're seeing some of the 2016 projects spill into 2017. But still, the buildup in 2016 is why we're having this incredible record every single quarter. And this year, for the first time, we're going to install 10 gigawatts of electricity. So it's amazing. It's groundbreaking. And we expect more growth ahead, no question.
We have a new president coming in. This administration doesn't seem to be pro-renewables. They seem to be more focused on fossil fuels. Give us your predictions on what's up for 2017 in the solar industry.
Well, I think the new administration is not anti-jobs. They are not anti-economic growth. They're pro-innovation. We are on a train that is moving forward very fast because of its market strength and its market potential. And so, you know, the rhetoric is one thing, but the way that things actually turn out can sometimes be different. And I don't think that we're going to see a lack of support for the benefits that solar brings to communities across this country from anyone. So, we don't feel, defeated. We feel emboldened. And so we're looking forward to the future.
Well, we've done a number of shows on solar and different technologies like transparent solar panels that you can use in windows and even cell phone covers. What's something amazing that you see on the horizon that maybe our listeners have not heard about?
Well, gosh, you know, there's a lot of examples of those amazing things. And we all like to read about them, whether it's solar highways or solar in the middle of the ocean and solar balloons and those types of things. And I'm really excited about the sort of the long-term sort of imagination that solar stirs in people. But honestly, I'm probably more excited about the growth of the industry on the ground as it's being built right now. To think that 10 years ago, you know, we were less than 0.1% of the total electricity supply, and now we're at 1%, and soon we're going to grow to 3.5%. That's a 3,500% gain in the amount of solar in just the last, in what will be about 15 years. It's astonishing. And so I'm really excited about where we're going as an industry. I love the new, exciting and sort of whiz-bang ideas, but I'm more excited about the real growth that's going on the ground.
Well, Dan, keep those gigawatts coming, and we appreciate you for being on GreenSense.
We sure will. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate you having me.
That's Solar Energy's Industry Association VP of Communications, Dan Witten, joining us on GreenSense.
StartEngine has raised millions for green companies selling shares directly to the general public. GreenSense Farms has raised close to $500,000 and Elio Motors close to $17 million. If you need capital for your business, go to startengine.com and start raising the money you need.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
Machine technology is advanced most rapidly by war and racing. We chose racing. That's the slogan used by Dezsir Molnar's Flying Car Invitational happening later this year. Not only is he the organizer of the event, he's also a builder and pilot of his own flying car. Dezsir joins us on GreenSense right now. Welcome.
Hello, Robert.
I love the flying car concept, and I am really happy that you're advancing technology with this invitational event. We're not moving this idea quick enough, so I commend you on your initiative, and thanks for joining us here on GreenSense.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
On your website, it says that flying car racing promotes lightweight vehicles to reduce the impact of travel upon the world. Why is racing important for the development of flying cars?
Racing's been important for everything as far as development, whether it's tennis rackets or skateboards or motorcycles, whatever. So that's never happened for flying cars. It hasn't been applied. And the reality is that most of the machines that we travel with or that we have in our daily lives have had some level of competition in their development. Mostly what's happened with flying cars is people try to rush to market and just make money on them. And so as a result, they've always been kind of compromised in the design. Nobody really knows what to do, 5-seaters, 10-seaters, whatever. So I want to race them to which will really define the design.
Well, we've been a big advocate of that concept. We test lots of cars here on GreenSense, and we feel that that trickle-down theory from the racetrack to the consumer car has been employed many times. So what you're doing with flying cars is just fantastic. What inspired you, Des, to get involved with flying cars?
I was kind of out of the private space world at that, about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I was getting done with it. I'd been in it for about 20 years and other people were picking it up. So I felt that that was already on its path. And then I just simply needed one day and so I started looking, well, what's my options? I knew that there had been many that had been developed and built, but I just didn't know what was available. And I didn't really find anything that was very applicable to what I was doing. So I just kind of set off, like I have all my life, to just say, okay, well, there's kind of a window of opportunity here to make something better, and I just started working on it.
How do you think flying cars are going to change the world for the better?
Well, hopefully they'll do what Amory Lovins has been asking for a long time, which is to reduce the weight of vehicles. And the reason for that is that it will definitely reduce the impact of travel. And like one thing I tell people, like, it's amazing right now. If you have a hard time buying a car that you can't roll down a hill without polluting. I mean, you need to run an engine just to operate the brakes and the steering on these big, heavy cars. So what I want to, I tell people, look, the only way to make cars lighter is that you either have to pedal them or you're going to have to fly them, because bicycles always function, you know, as people always basically whittle them down to the lightest weight they can. And the same thing happens with airplanes and birds. I mean, they just have to be light and they have to be efficient. And that's how it's going to change things.
Well, let's talk about your own flying car design here. And listeners, if you're close to a computer, take a look at the website flyingcarracing.com. Click the racing category and then scroll down to Molnar Racing to see Dez's design, which actually looks more like a gyrocopter. So tell us a little bit about that, Dez.
Yeah, it definitely is. And the reason it is, again, back to, you know, a few years ago when I started this, I wanted to do something that would allow me to fly into congested areas and land in a short distance. And airplanes are not very good at that. And helicopters are quite expensive. The average helicopter, I mean, a new one will cost you around $250,000. But gyroplanes cost a fraction of that. You can get one for less than $10,000. And that's because they're not very complicated machines. The engine is not directly attached to the rotor blade. So I wanted something that would allow me to land in short distances and be affordable and have a lot of maneuverability. And then the objective was fly into congested places and then simply drive out of them as a motorcycle, split lanes. So that was the original concept I had, and that's the bike I built.
What's also neat on your website is it shows all the different categories of the different types of vehicles that you're going to be entering into this competition, which we'll get to in a second. But tell us a little bit about how your car design stands out. What makes it unique?
Well, the first one I did, that bike motorcycle, is unique in that I've located a propeller in the center of the fuselage, which gives very good cooling for the engine. And I use just a simple off-the-shelf stock motorcycle engine. So that means you're able to pass smog laws, which, believe it or not, are one of the most challenging things about aircraft design, or I should say flying car design, is passing smog. And there's a lot of designs out there today that could never do that. They wouldn't be legal on the road, except for some of the old ones where maybe they're grandfathered in. So that was important to me. I wanted to have something that worked really well on the street and was legal on the ground and in the air.
If you just joined us, we're talking about one of my favorite topics, flying cars, with Desjardins Molnar, designer of the Molnar GT flying car, and the organizer of this year's flying car race. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Des, tell us about costs and any licensing requirements to operate and fly your gyrocopter.
The costs are very small. Mostly what happens is, I'm in the United States, it's very easy here, very liberal to be able to build your own aircraft and license it. And it costs about, I think, $5 every 2 years to register. It's not as expensive as an airplane. And a person that's 14 years old can be allowed to fly a plane with a license. Unlike a car, you have to be at least 16 in the United States. So the costs are actually not that prohibitive, and you have the capacity to build airplanes in this country and get them registered. It's a great opportunity for creative development.
Again, I just commend you on your efforts. I wish there was more people like you focused on this area to advance the field. But I also really want to talk about this race. So let's talk a little bit about what you're planning for later this year. Tell us a little bit about the course and the ground rules of who can enter.
The course is pretty simple. I'm going to be starting a flying section in the El Mirage Dry Lake, which is an area in California that is an off-highway vehicle park. So it's sanctioned for very high-speed travel. You can go out there and set a speed record if you like. So you can drive 300 or 400 miles an hour if you'd like. It's designed for that. I mean, should say the area is allocated for that. Or you can fly there. So our objective is to be doing a lot of the flying there at that area so we can basically have the safest possible operations. You can land any place. And then once that's done, people are going to hit the road, which is just a legal highway, and drive up into Nevada to the Boulder City. And that's almost 300 miles on the road. So the course itself is going to help define the mission of these vehicles and make them, in my opinion, streamline the size of them, and also require that they are street legal as well as legal in the air.
So who could enter the contest? What types of cars and what type of driver qualifications?
Well, ideally, people who already have flying cars are the people I want the most. And there's about 100 of those machines out there. And so I'm basically allowing any of them to enter into the unlimited category with whatever you've got. If you've got it, bring it. There's also a second section that I'm doing to promote the development of electric aircraft, which are not going to have a problem with development because they're really the next big thing. And I'm developing one now myself called the Street Wing. And that will be all electric vehicles as far as the drive systems. And also I'm having a drone competition for people that maybe they don't have the ability or the resources to make a full-size aircraft. So then you would be able to design a small vehicle, an unmanned one that can drive on the ground and also fly in the air and race that at either location, either in California or on the receiving side in Nevada.
Is there a cost to enter the event?
At this stage, I'm not interested in cost or charging people. It's not my objective to do anything except lay out the red carpet and a gallery for people to come and get involved. To operate on the desert itself, there's simply a local fee of $15 for people to go out there, and that's something they can do 365 days a year if they want to bring their vehicles out and test them. It's the El Mirage Dry Lake, and it's a part of the Bureau of Land Management. So it's just a $15 fee to use a 7-mile-long runway. Basically, it's a great opportunity.
Des, how are you financing all of this?
I always find ways to do what I want to do. I've been an inventor all my life, and basically I do what I'm most excited about, and then I always find a way to do it. I tell people, look, if you have something you want to do, then the smallness of the amount of cash you need is going to be, effectively not your problem. You're going to just focus on what you want to do, get going, start lobbing bombs in the direction you want to go, and you will find resources, you will find help, and you'll be able to get done what you need. And I've always said that, and I've always pulled it off.
Well, I love your attitude, and I got invited to an XPRIZE visioning session. And when I heard the story of how they created the first XPRIZE for the SpaceX XPRIZE, and they didn't have all the funds before they put that prize together. So
they didn't have any of them. I was the judge. I actually wrote the check for the XPRIZE.
Did
I signed
you?
The check. Yeah, I was a judge for the XPRIZE. And yeah, I know that story quite well because I lived through it.
Yeah, it's just that. So I love that attitude. So right now, cars are unusual. They're a bit of an oddity. When do you think they'll become mainstream? And what's it going to take to make it happen?
Well, I'll say this really quickly. That question gets asked to me a lot. And what I can honestly say is there will not be any flying cars made or built or manufactured in mass for people to purchase and use until they've been raced. They will have to be raced first, and there will be a lot of hand-built aircraft and vehicles built and raced and tested before any of that happens. So the honest answer is, once they're raced and there's some winners and some really good designs that fall out of that, then there may be something that people will be find much more compelling. But right now, that's going to have to happen, and that's exactly how it's going to happen.
Desure, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. I'd like to invite you to come back on the show. It sounds like we have a lot of stories we can share together here, especially regarding XPRIZE. So I commend you on your race. Please keep in touch and have a great new year.
I appreciate it, Robert. Thanks for having me on your show.
That's Desure Molnar, designer of the Molnar GT flying car and organizer of this year's flying car race. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. We'll be back next week with...
Well, we talked flying cars this week, electric cars, ones that are on the ground. Lots of growth predicted in the next 20 years or so. We'll find out from a guy across the pond who just published a comprehensive report on electric vehicles.
Now you can listen to every Green Sense show. Just visit our website, greensensefarms.com, where you can subscribe to a podcast or view the list of radio stations that air our show. If you want to reach me, send me an email, robert@greensenseshow.com. Our goal here is to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. We hope our guests have inspired you to action. Now it's your time. There's no free lunch here. You got to do your part. No matter how big or small, lots of actions multiplied by lots of people can make a big difference. So stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.